Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. As soon as we get the system worked out, we're all going to play this from John Lee Hooker. We can't have this day go by without John Lee Hooker. It is his birthday. And one of my favorites of all time. A man who actually changed the course of music because he didn't stop playing until the day he died and played with everybody. So, but we're talking about serious issues we're facing Baltimore. We're joined here by Kershana Davis, who is a writes to the Afro-American, specializes in the fields of news, politics, and fashion. Joins us. Good to have you back again. Kimberly Armstrong is with us once again, community advocate, author, speaker, awarded Spirit of Woman Award, who lost her son to violence in the city. Kimberly, always a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark.
Michael Johnson is with us, community leader, activist, founder of the Paul Robeson Institute, starting a new film festival. Do I have that right?
No, actually, we're bringing the National African American Music Museum. Hall of Fame Museum to Baltimore.
We'll talk about that
2016.
One yeah. Cameron Miles joins us by phone, director of Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood. Cameron, welcome back. Good to have you with us as well. Oh, he's not there yet. Okay, well, he'll be there in a minute. All right. So, welcome. Let's talk about, from your perspective, because what is going on. I mean, there's always a danger that people want to lay the issue of murders and violence in our communities. It's all the police's fault for not doing the job right. Or it's all the mayor's fault she's not doing her job right. Or it's some pathology, something's wrong with black folks in the city. Right? But none of those get to the real issues, I think, about what is happening and why and where we go and what we do to answer that. So you all approach this from very different ways because of your life experiences and what you bring to the table with this. So I'd like to hear what you think about what this really says about us and what we're not doing that we could or should be doing if, in fact, we can do anything. Kershana, do you want to lead us off?
Sure. I think that after the initial spike in violence we had earlier in the summer, that everyone pretty much thought that, you know, things were starting to cool down. We actually went maybe about 4 or 5 days at some points with, limited shootings, limited murder. So I think a lot of people thought that the police department had got a pretty good handle on what was going on. One of their major initiatives was deploying cadets, recent graduates in the Eastern and Western districts, just to like have people on foot in a lot of the different areas. And it seemed to be working. It seemed that that was kind of helping to, even though the numbers were still up from last year, it seemed that there was a little bit of a calm. And then this past weekend happened. And obviously, you know, the community is in an uproar. But like I said, like you were saying, Mark, you can't lay it all at the mayor's feet, the police department's feet, even the community's feet. But I think that I'm not sure you know that The Intersection recently did their listening campaign where they listened to a lot of different organizations around the city and kind of just got a feel for what some of the issues were. And I think it really goes back to some of those core family values that it seems that people aren't looking at anymore. One of my biggest things, one of the proponents that I really proposed to The Intersection was, you know, getting support for young black women who are mothers in the city who don't have that support system, just basic, you know, parenting skills, how to cook for their kids, you know, nutritional values. Because I think that some of, you know, we can't come in and try to, you know, fix a broken home completely. But if the home is already broken, how do we mend it there before it becomes bigger than what it is?
You know, I think it comes back to personal responsibility. You know, we want to point the finger. We want to say it's the police fault, it's the neighbor's fault, it's the community's fault, it's the mayor's fault. It's everybody's fault but that person who picks up a gun or picks up a weapon that hurts or harms someone. Now, I'm going to talk strictly from the point of being affected by this. It'll be 9 years, September the 27th, which is next month, that my son was murdered at the age of 16. It took almost 8 years for them to figure and find out who was the culprit that killed my son. When they did, this young man was only 14 years old at the time.
When he committed the crime.
When he committed the crime. And only because he had killed someone else and was in jail, and this thing that's going around about the not snitching is a bunch of crap. Now, the young man who knew that he always knew that this young man probably had something to do or knew something about what happened and why this person killed my son. There was a lot of rumors and a lot of things floating around. And so come to find out, this young man did know something. But until he got locked up and they gave him a deal, then he wanted to really tell what happened and really point the finger at this young man. So after I got some of the story, it's like I still have no reason 9 years later why my son is not here over bull crap. You know, so when does it come back to personal responsibility? I don't care how much you can be the greatest parent on earth. You can have the greatest parenting skills. But when your children go out here and start wreaking havoc and chaos in their own community, you know, it's just chaotic. We are in it seems like war. You know, I have a 14-year-old daughter that I'm almost afraid to even let go outside and go to the store.
Mark.
Before we go to the phones and hear these emails come in, let's go to your thoughts.
Yeah, first I wanted to pass my family to you for your loss, and I can experience that loss with you.
Thank you.
I think that, you know, there's a couple of ways you can look at what is going on. And one of the things we have to look at is that America itself has been at war, to use your paraphrase, for quite a long time, and that we've almost raised a generation of people who look at, well, if you're not doing what I'm saying, I'm bad enough. I go in there in your country and I'll do what I got to do. And then we got to look at what is the relationship with the media? What is the relationship with television and games and culture, personal responsibility? And how does, I do think the government plays a role in fixing. I think that we have to look at the fact that the police department, I agree with you, the police department is the cleanup crew. They're the ones that come after it has happened. And that the responsibility would rely in a lot of our communities. But then you have to look at, do we still have communities and residential neighborhoods anymore? What exactly does that look like today? And now that you're having a tremendous amount of gentrification that's going on in the city, now that you have people who are miseducated, out of a job, out of work, untrained, you have a shrinkage when you're using the antidote that about drug dealing and this and that. You have a shrinkage of drug addicts who are now primarily dealing with a lot of prescription drugs, alcohol and methadone mixed together as a cocktail. So you're shrinking. So what you have is these battles going on in these communities. And so what I just think is that, and I've said this many times, I just think that we need that Marshall Plan. We need to put this whole thing into perspective and say, what do we want our communities to look like in 5 years? What do we want our communities to look like in 10 years? And that we need to move on it very quickly, because with lack of jobs, lack of education, lack of personal responsibilities, things will happen.
We can take a break here and come right back, immediately back. And I want to read this one Facebook message, and we'll come to the other ones. Joe Green wrote in saying, there's little money left in the drug game, as you were saying, and even less common sense among the dealers. Young, unorganized crime sects are running pockets of Baltimore's drug society. Gone are the days of central crime bosses with whom the police could negotiate discussions over turf violence. Not to mention, we have a state city attorney that needs to go. That was his political statement, not mine. So we'll be right back. Stay with us. Mark Steiner. That was John Lee Hooker, was born on this day. We are celebrating his life with his music during our breaks. We're talking about the celebration of life in Baltimore should be taking place as we talk about the violence and crime that's hitting our city, and in really kind of record numbers, 20 people shot in the last 80 days in this community. And I will add that this is happening in a very throughout Baltimore. This is not, people want to make this into just an issue of black folks and crime, which it's not. It's way beyond that. It's something that's in the psyche of this country. We're also now joined by the way Cameron Miles has joined us, mm-hmm. Director of Mentoring Males in the Hood, Michael Johnson, community leader and activist, Kimberly Armstrong, a winner of the Spirit of Woman Award, and community advocate, author, speaker, who lost his son to violence in this community, Krishana Davis, a journalist with the Afro-American Newspapers here in Baltimore, specializing in news, politics, and fashion. 410-319-8888 is now here. You can bring your thoughts. We'll read Wanda Bell's piece that she wrote in on her Facebook page. It's very long. I'll try to read as much of it as I can to get her thoughts out here. So the question is for the four of you. I'll start with Cameron. Cameron, welcome. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you, Mark, and good morning to you and all your guests.
Yeah, good morning, Cameron, my brother. How are you?
So I'm very curious now, if you were really sitting and advising the mayor of Baltimore about what to do, what you would say. And one of the things, let me just say this since you didn't hear it earlier, Cameron, that Michael Johnson was saying part of it is also a larger social issue we're facing. It's not just about the immediate issues of patchwork. We're talking about people with no jobs and communities are falling apart, and there's a real social issues that you have to invest in to change society to really get to the heart of it. But you're there. You have power. What do you effectively do, Cameron?
Well, let me just back up, if I can, Mark, and just I was told based on an email to share some of the reasons for the upswing in violence. So I don't know if it's been mentioned, but I think at some point we have to have a triage effect. You know, there are a lot of mental health issues. Many people, many young people especially, and adults, they never learn to love themselves, Mark. They're hurting because of a missing father, being abused, lied to over and over, a drug-addicted parent or parents. You know that there's a massive fight within the drug trade for turf. Guns, gangs, drugs, they equal and cause this problem to continue to grow and grow and grow. If you get a package and you don't pay for it, you may be working with someone selling pills. If you stop selling and start using, which many folks do, there's a shortage. Somebody has to pay. And when you mess up that money, it could mean your life. We can never do or say anything out of anger. Many of our young people are very smart, and they want the American dream, Mark. They want the material possessions that they see others with. We live in a microwave society, and they want it yesterday because so many do not think they will live to be 25. They are doing all that they can, any way they can, and I think that's why you have a massive influx in the violence. So I don't know when you want to get to responses to it, but I laid out several suggestions, and whenever you want me to give those, I'll give them. Okay. I just don't want to take time from your other guests.
No, that's fine. That's fine. I want folks to join us here at 410-319-8888. Now, let me just read what Wanda wrote in, a piece of what she wrote in. She said, the collective community that Dr. King spoke of has failed to prepare, educate, and propel many youth to be positive, contributing citizens throughout this nation. When they come of age in a system that has written them off and invest more money in prison systems than they do in schools or recreation centers, they find alternative ways to survive. We also don't equip them with the emotional tools to address the sense of pain, loss, hurt, and anger, and frustration that they feel from living in these conditions. All of this coupled with the easy access to guns, devaluation of life, miseducation, and witness to devastation creates a storm that is ruining lives, creating chaos and fear in our cities. If those who exhibit violent behavior do not value their own lives or understand the negative consequences of their actions, they have no value for the lives of others. And she has some solutions we'll come to in a minute. I'll read that part of her email. So let's talk about what we would say in response to this. You know, we had kids from the intersection here the other day. We've been doing this project on violence, interviewing people in two different communities in Baltimore. And, you know, and one of the things that came out on the show, we talked about how the Department of Recs and all the money's been taken out of the Department of Recs, and they're building Harbor Point. The money they're spending on that one park in Harbor Point is more than all the money they're spending on the Department of Recs in the city of Baltimore.
And I think you know, Mark, that sends a message to our kids, you know, what we really value. You know,
right.
we value the harbor, but we don't value uptown and supporting initiatives that keep them from being bored, or keep them very active, or keep their minds active. And so what kind of message is that? If you think that our kids are not listening and looking and seeing what's being done, that's also the way they feel. If you really have a serious dialogue with some of these kids, they'll say that, oh, you'll invest money downtown or to build a jail, but you won't invest money into my school, or you won't invest money into my community. A lot of these communities don't even have rec centers anymore. You know, I mean, if you think our children are not listening and they don't see what's going on, so therefore they feel like no one is really investing in me, no one really cares about me, so why should I care about you, this community, or even my people?
I think you also have to look at when money is invested, how it's invested as well. A lot of people criticize National Night Out when I was out, especially at the Mondawmin one. So I guess they used to do National Night Out more like block parties. So they would be block by block everywhere in the city. And this last year, they were more like collective. So, you know, all of the, you know, Northeast District kind of had one together, like Montebello. There was a lot of the Western District had one together at Montebello. At Mondawmin, and one of a woman that I spoke with kind of criticized and said, you know, that kind of doesn't, I think the idea was, okay, we'll bring the whole community together in one place, but that really doesn't show anything as far as presence in a community. When you have it on a block with the police officers along, you know, there may be people in the drug trade in that block, that kind of shows more of that presence. And I think a lot of people were very upset that the, you know, the city didn't invest more money to have it the way they traditionally had it. So I thought, you know.
Cameron, then we'll come over.
Say again?
To Michael. Cameron, go ahead.
Well, I agree with everything that's been said. I just think that we need to have more resources for young people. They, as Kim stated, you know, they see all that's going on, and they feel left out. They feel left alone. You know, nobody's coming to see about us. And if the people that have the money are not willing to invest a part of their largesse, be it government, be it private business, with these communities— communities and young people are going to react and respond, maybe not in the right way, the mature way, but the way they think is going to allow them to get the things that they want. You're having a major problem down in the Little Italy area. So many neighborhoods are experiencing rage and young people not being mentored, tutored, and not been loved. So, you know, and I just want to say on the outset, Mark, any body who wants to get their young man between 8 and 18 to me, I would be glad to give out my number. We meet the first and third Saturday on Monroe Street, and I would be glad to make an attempt to work with them. Any gang member that wants to talk or get something off their chest, I'm not with the police department, but I would be glad to listen and try to help them work through whatever issue they have.
Michael Johnson?
Well, and having people like Cameron Miles and David Miller and many, many other men is kind of interesting because, you know, I know what they do and I know how well their impact is. And both of them brothers I respect highly. I think that what we also need to recognize, I think, is not only young people looking, but the adults are looking. Adults who are unemployed who walk past a work site and see that the work site exists there with hundreds of workers in some cases, and none of them look like no one in their neighborhoods. The reflection of the adults who want to work, who do not have the job training opportunity, how I think a point that the young lady said in reference to now the National Night Out, it seemed like it was a accommodation thing. That's because a lot of these community associations, in all due respect, a lot of these community associations are run by people who are seniors, who are afraid of even their own blocks, afraid of their own neighborhoods.
Right.
And we have to become like the all of the folks that are around this table, as well as my friend on the phone, to understand that we're not afraid. Young people recognize when you're not afraid.
Yes.
Young people recognize when you're phony. Young people recognize, and they may understand what's going on down at the harbor, that you're not investing in them, but you're investing in the harbor. But have we incorporated that in the education system to say very clearly, this is how government works? We're not even teaching kids now how government works to even make the changes.
Well, let me go to the phones here, but then I'm going to push a little bit on some of the stuff we've all been saying here. 410-319-8888, your thoughts. What needs to be done? Leonard, you're on the air.
Yes. My name is Leonard. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Leonard.
Guest.
Good morning, sir.
One problem that I see in the city, I not originally from the city, one of the problems that I have seen in the city is that your mayor, number one, don't invest in the park and the recreation centers. Number two, when you could spend the money you're spending to have a car race in the city and you cannot invest in the school, in the city, in a wrong message. And I believe the people of Baltimore, they need to stand up and find a mayor and find people that will love the city again and put money towards the young people of the city. And that's all I have to say.
Leonard, thank you. Let me take off what Leonard was saying here and ask you all to comment. Many people at this around this table, and I mean, have been involved in programs to reach out to young people, to work with young people in this community. And I spent a lot of my life doing that same thing. And I remember sitting in with folks at Rose and Ashland in the 1990s from 9 at night to 3 in the morning, kind of just a force of moral suasion to say no to the gangs and have a place where young people could gather around to feel safe. And all that's been going on. Everybody's been involved in something like that at this table, just about, in very deep, deep, deep ways. So let me posit something that may be a little comfortable. The work we've done has been really important work because it saved individual lives and reached out to people and touched individual human beings. But is that the answer in a larger sense? I mean, if people are not organized in the community on another level, as well as the level of working with young people to try to save some lives, which I'm not demeaning, I think it's critical. But if the other part's not there, where there's kind of an organized resistance to the lack of caring and the lack of investment as a social movement, will anything ever change? Can we counsel our way out of this problem? It's not just up to black men to go back in the city, into communities and do stuff. That's an important component, but that's not going to be enough either.
Well, I don't agree all the way with that. I think that there's factual information that the work that folk have done, and they come into the community, when they come back into the community, things change. When they go in and pull young men out, and I'm speaking of young men, my friend on the phone, when he brings young men into Coppins or where he's set up at, there is a difference. And a lot of us see, for those of us who've been in the venue a long time, we have seen the success. The problem is that the city itself, as a moving part, is changing so rapidly that you don't have neighborhoods again where the answers are with Miss Jackson down the street or Miss Hall up the street or Mike Johnson or Cameron Miles or anybody up the street, because the neighborhood is moving with parts. So we need more men.
I'm not saying we don't. I agree with that. But and
is it working? Is that your question?
No. My question is, I think that the work, like Cameron, the work you do
with young
men, I've seen it. It's powerful. Mm-hmm. It changes young lives. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm asking, and let me start with Cameron and go right to Kimberly, is that enough? Does it have to be something larger and deeper that is more of a social movement to force change in the city so that people are paying attention and talking about jobs and changing communities and forcing money to be invested in rec as opposed to just in policing? That's what I'm saying. Cameron
Mark,
and then Kimberly.
Mark makes a great point, and please don't think that anything that you and the others and our elders have done, black, white, and brown, over the years, did not help.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm not saying that.
It set up an infrastructure, but I think we have to keep turning the wheel. I'm not in a posture to push blame on any elected official or anybody. I'm just trying to be consistent, and I think that many of us, we have to stop talking, and I'm not speaking of your guests, but too many folk are talking and not doing the work. More police have got to walk the beat during high crime time. More police, in my humble opinion, should wear civilian clothes. Young people relate to everyday clothes more than they do a uniform. I think that would bridge a divide between young people and the police. The police have to respect young people and vice versa. Too many policemen, police women, disrespect young people with words, foul language, and the way they go and turn their pockets inside out and make them sit on the curb. These kind of things are humiliating. Many in the community have negative thoughts about the police because of many negative incidents. We need to have more community meetings to talk about these things. I think, Mark, moving forward, there need to be positive messages on billboards in crime-ridden areas. There's just not enough positive messages going forth. We're a subliminal message kind of people. We're optical, and if we see positive messages, we react in a positive way. And I think that if we see positive messages, young people in communities, they'll begin to act a different way. I mean, I could get into the liquor stores.
Yes.
You said something about jobs. I want to give just a suggestion. Why couldn't, from this point forward, every construction site that goes up have 20% of young people working in apprentice trainee positions. I mean, why couldn't we do that? The young people coming out of DJS or coming from the community, black, white, male, and female, working as apprentice trainees, I think that would begin to help them make more than minimum wage and get them away from that grime. A lot of young people enter the drug game not because they want to be, but because they want to eat. They might have two or three siblings that have been wearing the same Pampa all week, and that Pampa needs to be changed. And they're responsible for putting food on the table and buying clothes and whatever else, keep the rent. And you know, I can go on and on, but those are the real kind of things that we need to look at.
And, you know, I want to say, too, Mark, you bring up an excellent point. I think that that's a beginning, but at the same time, when you continue to do this work over a long period of time, and we know the impact that we make, you know, on the people and the lives that we touch. But at some point, too, you have to realize that we are human. We get a little bit older. People start to get a little bit more stressed out. People start to get burned out, especially when you don't have the resources. Now, just imagine.
Please say that again. Please say that again. Somebody's got to be listening.
Yes.
Because there are many folks who are working with these young people. So, I'm struggling. Everybody's struggling.
Everybody is.
And money is going to put up the big tower, big development.
So we want this beautiful glass building, right? But we really don't want to put the resources into what makes that building functional, you know, or sustainable. We talk about sustainability, but how do you sustain something if you're not feeding it correctly? You know, so we have to really, I mean, you know, I know Cameron and so many people who do this work. You have to have a passion for this. You have to love what you do. I still live in the same home. I still live in the same community. I'm still out there in the street. I go out there and talk to these kids. My house is Miss Kim. Everybody just knows me as Miss Kim. They come, they want chicken, they want a glass of water. You know, they when they see that you love them, they respect you more. I can still go out. They can be out in the middle of the street fighting, and guess who they call? They call Miss Kim. You know, they come and look for me when the police got four or five of them, you know, hemmed up on the corner. So sometimes I have to be the mediator between the police and them, and find out what is the problem. Can we do something, have an alternative other than locking them up, especially if you didn't find anything on them? So those kind of things, you know, at some point, you know, when you don't have the resources and the support to continue to do that or have those kind of dialogues and those meetings from 9 to 3 o'clock in the morning, it dwindles away. And you know the impact. Just imagine if Cameron, David, myself, you, and any other people around the table really had the resources. This would be a dynamic city, and people would want to even come here even more, but just stay. Because at some point, you know, my daughter is 14. My oldest son is 29. I have two grandchildren. At some point, I don't want to live in a war zone. I might have to move.
As you said, it's stressful.
It's very stressful.
Krishana, as a representative of the younger generation.
So, Mark, you're kind of talking about these dual systems, and I definitely would agree with you that there has to kind of be that dual system. So, yes, you can give selflessly of yourself and do as much as you can. Like, I've been mentoring. I've mentored since I was in high school. So I definitely agree that, like, you can reach someone else. But at the same time, I will agree that there has to be that push from the community and a more of a collective agenda. But I wonder, like, are there models out there that people have seen that work and that are effective that Baltimore could adopt or that some of the residents could adopt? So I think maybe there needs to be like a conversation given about like finding a model and adopting one, because I think that there are people out there who would definitely say like I'm on board to, you know, have a united front against something, even though we all are like parts of this puzzle. But is there a model out there that works that people know that they can all join on board with, and it won't be a lot of, you know, bravado, there won't be a lot of, you know, different personalities that are clashing, but just, you know, reaching towards a common goal?
And because even in this work, the personalities do begin to clash.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mark, I'd just like to say this, if I may. There's not a one piece that will fix. I think there are myriad parts of a puzzle. Mike does his part. The young lady that just spoke does her part. Kim does my part. David Miller. I mean, everybody has a role to play And in a town where I believe it were roughly between 630,000 and 650,000 people, there are not enough people stepping up to do their part. There are many people working with youth that never get mentioned. They never get a grant, and they are doing the work. So I want to shout out to them. We have to find a way to fund community programs without a cumbersome grant process. The powers that be, they fund big business, but again, the children are left out, yelling out, screaming out. Baltimore is one of the largest homeless juvenile populations. I could talk to you from now until next week about how dysfunctional the juvenile system continues to be. At some point, the powers that be have to fund the little guy, Mark. We have to find a way to turn vacant homes into shelters or businesses. Young people with the right training could sell sandwiches, coffee, household goods in a remodeled home and live there to earn their keep. What about daycare for seniors? Many of our young people with the right training could be spending time with seniors who are sitting in their homes, dwindling to nothing, have no one to talk to. How about giving more young people paid internships?
I'm sorry, I probably keep coughing. I apologize.
No problem.
But social
skills must be taught in the school system, Mark.
For example,
handshake, eye contact, sir, no ma'am, when to talk, when to be quiet, not getting angry, mutual respect, looking the part, parentheses, shirt and tie, being on time, modeling positive behavior,
do what
the boss tells you to do, be honest, etiquette. Those things are not being taught, Mark, and that breaks down the fabric of our community.
But what I'm suggesting, and what you raised earlier a little bit here, Michael Johnson, is that that's why I'm saying that on some levels this is for this to change, you have to force the way we do business in this city to change. Now, you talked about jobs. What I have noticed, by the way, as a sidebar, is when I was driving through Hamden the other day and saw this gigantic construction job going on at the bottom of Chestnut and then people redoing one of the other main streets coming down towards the expressway, there were a lot of black men working. Because those are union jobs. And when you have union jobs in this city, then black men get jobs to work in the city in construction. There's a difference between how we do things in this town. But the only way that changes in a massive way is if people organize and demand the change. That's what I'm saying. So, I mean, you're not going to get all the things Cameron said that we need in our schools unless people are organized to demand that change in our system.
Well, I think there's two dynamics here. There's organizing and then there's mobilizing. And I think that we have a tendency sometimes to organize around a lot of things, but we don't mobilize around a lot of things. We don't mobilize to go to the work site to shut a work site down. We don't mobilize enough to go into a neighborhood where there have been a lot of problems in that neighborhood and mobilize ourselves. That we organize, but we don't mobilize. The other thing is that we have a tendency to, we have to look out. There is a generation that I've been dealing with between 30 and 45 years old. They're fathers, they're mothers. Many of them are miseducated or undereducated. They don't have jobs, and they're starting to say, I give up. And we can, and for those that are reaching out to the young people, obviously, medals and accolades aside, but there is a strong, strong population, you know, of this groups of people who have been miseducated based on statistics. They've been imprisoned. And when they come back, we've got to find something for them to do. And so as we're working with their children, we got to think about how do we work with their fathers and their mothers, because on the sidebar, as you say, when we grew up, all of us at this table with gray hair, when we grew up, we saw men going to work. You saw men with lunch pails, and you saw men going to work as you were going to school. And so you saw men. But now when young people, children, get on the bus heading to school, they see the work sites, which I'm glad that you saw that particular work site, but they see the work sites that don't look like their fathers or their mothers or their uncles or the men in the community.
But you know, too, you know, from what I've seen is that you do have, it's like almost when you drive through the community and you drive through Baltimore City and some of the worst parts of Baltimore City is that you see people with such sense of hopelessness. And like people are just walking around like they're just here. They have no ambition. They have no, I'm just here. This is how I'm always going to live. So I'm fought, you know, I'm not doing anything else. So It's just, and it's sad to say, is that there's a population of people we just got to let go. It ain't no trying to touch them. Right. Ain't no trying to save them. The only thing that can save them is Jesus, period. You got to leave them alone. You got to move on. Well, you know, so at the same time, you know, we have almost like a sense of less compassion for people and for life.
Well, the only thing I may, if I may, Margaret, I'll just disagree just as a point of reference is that, you know, I just don't think there's anybody that we just get rid of. If I may, there's no one that we discard, or there's no people that we just forget. I think that at the end of the day, if we do not start mobilizing what the real issues are, the real issues are lack of education, where some of these schools have pushed these young people out as quickly as they can, and lack of employment, which gives no sense of home, and bad housing and bad diets. When a person who lives in one zip code dies 20 years different of somebody that lives in another zip code, there is a huge a Marshall Plan problem we have here. And all of our programs even need to be expanded, even need to be funded. But at the end of the day, the city is moving in whatever direction it's moving. And until we mobilize, because we got organizations everywhere. Baltimore, and Cameron knows this. We got more organizations in Baltimore City than I've never seen in my life.
Right.
That's supposed to be paying attention to young people and incidents. But the issue is that we're not mobilizing all of them together so we can push this whole process forward.
And on the heels of that, Mike, and I know Mark knows this, a lot of organizations that get large amounts of money
are not really doing
the work.
Tell the story.
Not really working with the young people. And we got to be real. Our yes has to be yes. Our no has to be no. And if you promise a young person you're going to do something, you got to do it. So many young people have been disappointed and lied
Cameron,
to.
Cameron, we have to take a legal break here, an ID break. We'll be right back, so don't go away. We'll continue this discussion for the next few minutes. When we come back after this break, stay with us. And Eric, the next caller up, 410-319-8888.
Well, my mom love me. You see, I don't want to know. Until you get what you need, y'all.
Chuck Brown.
You got to give a lot just to get what you need.
His birthday today, too.
Y'all.
Passed away in 2012.
Is this your show? I mean, geez, I'm listening to all this. This is good, man.
What are you trying to say, Michael?
Nothing, Mark. I've known you a long time. You've always listened to the brothers.
On the way to our conversation, I want to say that support for WEAA is provided by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information available at 866-4-GLASS-1. We are joined here by Michael Johnson, who has a lot to say about how I run my show. Community activist and leader, Krishana Davis, who writes for the Afro-American newspapers, journalist for the Afro-American newspapers here in Baltimore, specializing in news, politics, and fashion. Cameron Miles, director of Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood. Kimberly Armstrong, community advocate, author, speaker. And who lost a son to violence in this community, and we've known each other a while, since the 90s. 410-319-8888 is number here. Eric, you're on the air. Hi, Eric.
Hello?
Go ahead, Eric. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning to you all. In many ways, I've worked with or supported your work, particularly Sister Kim, former member of my congregation. But what I want to point out is, a term that many of you are talking around, and hopefully I didn't miss it. It's about building relationships. And even within community associations, they have now gone to a law and order type of operation. I live in Northwest Baltimore. There's an influx of Mexicans and African Americans. Many probably have come together, pooled money to buy homes, semi-detached homes. The community association largely operates that if you follow the law, everything will be in order. But there are people moving into many communities that could use assistance on knowing when the trash is put out, knowing how to cut grass on a regular basis. There's some very small things, even with children in my community, for example. When report card time comes up, many of them come to my house, A's and B's. Every A and B gets $5. The bottom line is we go after children in the community when they've done something wrong, as opposed to supporting them and building relationships along the way. This goes into with all that is being discussed about organized groups, about making maneuvers to get our government to do things differently or better for our communities. But if we don't improve our relationships in our own communities with our own people, it will become a greater challenge to make any difference.
Eric, thanks so much for the call. When comments come in like this, and many people have said this on this panel so far today as well, and I said everybody on this panel has been involved at some level or another fairly intensely in working with young people. Cameron devoted his life to it. Now he has a full-time job, and he still devotes his life to it, but people are still doing this work. There are hundreds of people who are doing this work. And we talk about people not being involved. There are a lot of people in Baltimore involved in young people's lives, which is why I guess I keep pushing the idea, is there more that has to be done other than that? Not that that's not important. Not that that's not critical. But that when you have literally hundreds and thousands of people actually doing this work in this community on the sweat of their own brow, something's missing.
So, Mark, a lot of people have mentioned resources, and I can't find the exact website, but, you know, crowdfunding has kind of become like the new way that people are pulling together money. Sometimes, you know, you won't be able to get that $10,000 grant, but if, you know, you're setting up and telling people this is what we're looking to raise money for, chip in $5 here, chip in $10 here, chip in $100 if you can, that's probably like the newest way that people are really using technology. I think people, you know, being on the ground is great also pulling together money, but people are forgetting that there's a whole aspect in technology that people are using to raise funding. People are giving money from all over the country to help people in Baltimore. So, you know, I think we should think about that aspect as well.
And I think, too, Marcus, that you have a lot of people, you have a lot of great people in Baltimore who are doing the work. But a lot of times there's a disconnect. People don't know what's really out there. So if maybe when he talked about, Michael talked about earlier, the media, maybe instead of showing that we had 20 murders, maybe you show something about the Family Bereavement Center or Roberta's House or where you can go to get resources or talk about some of the things, the good things that are going on. Because when people keep hearing about death and killing and shooting, my 14-year-old daughter told me that I was barred from watching the news. Because every time I watch the news or something crazy happen, it affects her life. You know, she can't go here. You know, she can't do this. She can't do that. You know, and it's really sad that when you have a 14-year-old, you know, she's a good girl, too, who, you know, she's already, like, I'm not going to say corrupt, but she wonders why every time she turns around, there's always something bad on the news. Her and her friends don't want to watch the news. And then when they go outside, all they see is police cars, ambulance. You know, it's always something negative. So maybe we took a spin because this is a multi-tiered thing. It's not a one thing that's going to, you know, fix this thing. It's going to be multiple things and people embracing and supporting what each other do.
No, we have literally 2 minutes left in this segment. So,
Mark, can I get my contact information?
Yeah, okay, please do. Cameron, go right ahead.
Cameron Miles, 410-852-8013, 410-852-8013. Our website is mentoringmaleteens.org. Our next meeting is the first Saturday in September where we do tutoring from 9 to 2, and the third Saturday we have different speakers coming in as well as workshops, and I'll be glad to work with anybody. If they can't pay the fee, we'll work out a way to get a donation. And I just want to say thank you, Mark, again for having this discussion. I hope it won't be the last.
It will not.
Thank you to all your guests and all the gifts that they have and bring and continue to do to empower our community.
And we'll put your information on our website, Cameron, as well.
Thank you, sir.
Very closing thought. We've got literally a minute left.
Yeah, well, I think that, again, you know, it's about mobilizing. I think that we have to, at the same time, look at what got us here. I mean, we're getting ready, those folks who are getting ready to celebrate the 50th anniversary of
this Saturday
of the march,
and next Wednesday,
a march on Washington for the 24th and throughout the 24th to the 28th. But they need to look at the fact that they need to self-examine themselves. What have they done? And as for the people who say there's a lot of people around here doing a lot of things, there's always been a lot of people doing a lot of things, and they aren't always organized. But if we don't start mobilizing and start educating, we're going to be in the same conversation in 10 years.
No, I was just going to say, and I also think that I'm starting a tour. It's called Kimberly Speaking Life Tour, and I have two schools right now that I'm going to be working with over the year, because I want the young people to also see the after effect. When you hurt or kill someone, it's not just that person that you hurt. It's a whole family and community behind it. So I have a video, and I have footage of my son alive, and I also have footage of him in a casket to let them know is that life is for real, and once you're gone, you're gone, and it's not just the person's life that you affect. And if people want to contact me, my number is 443-416-0308.
Let me thank Kimberly Armstrong, Cameron Miles, Michael Johnson, Krishana Davis for being with us for this last part of this program, talking about the issues we're facing here in Baltimore City with gun violence and more. And we'll come back to this topic and keep pushing. And thank you all so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
We can take a very brief break, and we'll be joined by Dr. Shilpi Talhami, the Anwar Sadat Professor of Peace and Development at the University of Maryland College Park, to talk about Egypt and Syria, his new work. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Policeman is on a criminal season. What is he doing in here? I said the policeman is on a criminal season. What is he doing in here? The policeman is on a criminal season.